Trey, why are you looking so sad over there?
My Lord, my Savior, Robbie Avila.
Robbie Avila? What's wrong?
He didn't make March Madness. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Larry Nerd. Why?
It's a great question. There were a lot of teams that didn't get in that probably deserved it. USF was another one that we were rooting for to get into the tournament. But yeah, last week we did our podcast before the bracket was released, and we previewed some of our favorite players that we were going to be watching for in the tournament. Trey picked Robbie Avila, who goes by all those names in social media and other places. And so, unfortunately, we're not getting to see him in the real tournament, but we are seeing him in the NIT, Trey. How's he doing in the NIT?
He's made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, all right. Indiana State made it to the Final Four, which means they are vying for the title of the 69th best team in the United States. But a tournament win is a tournament win, and Robbie Avila is still making some playing time over there in the NIT tournament.
Yeah, so they're supposed to be playing either VCU or Utah for the semifinals, and then they will play Georgia, who is also in the Final Four right now, or UNLV in Seton Hall.
Seton Hall.
Seton Hall, my bad.
Yeah, there you go.
That's not a very common one, so I don't know how to pronounce that.
So my player to watch was Keisei Tominaga, who is a Japanese basketball player from Nebraska. They lost to Texas A&M. He had 21 points in the loss. But unfortunately, Nebraska didn't do as well as I wanted to. I had them in the Sweet 16 because I was on the phenomenon of Keisei Tominaga, and I bought in a little too hard on that, I think. So they didn't make my Sweet 16. We'll get to brackets in a little bit. Noah, you had Tyrese Samuel as your guy. So tell me about Tyrese Samuel.
11.6 rebounds and 5 assists in the Florida loss to Colorado. It was a very disappointing performance from him. I'm hoping to see him next year, wherever he ends up, because we know college, everything is weird. But yeah, he had an interesting game. It was really disappointing for him. He's a really big forward, though, so I can see him going somewhere, either in the NBA or in college basketball.
So, no, you said college is weird. So can you expand upon that statement a little bit?
Like, I went to Florida last year, but this year I go to Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's just going to transfer.
Yeah, the NIL's a little crazy. People are moving around. A lot of people jumping from college to college, division to division, coaches, players. It is a bit weird, but we're still enjoying the tournament. And I think the person that we enjoyed the most was the Oakland guard, Golkey.
Jack Golkey.
Jack Golkey. What a name.
He sounds like the guy from 40 Rock.
30 Rock?
30 Rock, yeah.
Jack Donaghy.
Yeah, Jack Golkey.
So, fun fact about Jack Golkey. He will be TurboTax's future employee of the month because he majors in accounting. So, yeah, Kentucky, congratulations. You lost to an accountant.
They get the award for losing to an accountant. Golkey had 10 three-pointers in that game. 10.
That's crazy. How can you allow someone who does numbers for a living with 10 three-pointers?
That dude shot almost 350 three-pointers this season. And that's just regular season alone.
And how many twos did he make?
He attempted 8.
8 twos overall?
Yeah.
Yep, the whole season. Golkey was quite the phenomenon, and they weren't easy threes. They weren't like wide open looks necessarily. He didn't have both feet set all the time. He was kind of shooting off one foot.
Running around, let me jump, and let me turn my back and just three-pointer.
Pulling a Dirk Nowitzki over here with the leg kick.
Yeah, it was something to watch. And I mean, when I turned it on and I saw him make the first couple three pointers, I looked at the guy, and I mean, he had like a receding hairline. Like, I'm like, this guy looks like he's my age. And I mean, he is 24, which is a little old for a college basketball player. They usually age out by 22, but he had some COVID years in there and some transfers. So again, college basketball is weird, right, Noah? Golkey was the phenomenon of the first weekend. They made it to the second round and got to play. I too enjoyed some of the fun with Golki, and there were some there were some people on social media that had some nice little lines about Golki that I saved. And so one of them is Zach Harper, who has his own podcast, but he said that Coach Calipari from Kentucky was going to blame his loss on NIL because Jack Golki has been selling solar panels for the last 11 years. And then there was a user named Mike Bovace, and he said everybody at work is going to be so happy for Jack Golki tomorrow when he gets into the office. So along your lines of the guy looking like an accountant, he fits it. And there were also some people, Barstool Sports was making a comparison between Golki and the phenomenon of Doug Edert from a couple of years ago, who also went on a first weekend run. Yeah, great name. Good, but both of them with fantastic names. And they both had some nice runs in the first weekend of the tournament.
Didn't Tyler induct Jack Edert into the Name Hall of Fame?
He did. Yes, on one of our earlier podcasts, you can catch that in the Name Hall of Fame. Doug Edert is in there. And I imagine this year's induction class might include Jack Golki.
It's a good name.
All right, so as part of this, we also did do the bracket. We didn't do it in our podcast, but we posted it on our social media channels. And so we each did a bracket, Noah, Trey, and I. We've had some technical difficulties getting a hold of Tyler, and we'll address that a little later. But with our brackets, we have we've been counting up our wins. And so we've had some mixed results here. Trey is in third place. He has 26 correct wins predicted.
Look, man, my woman's is better, okay?
Any particular picks that you were proud of on your bracket? Anything you nailed that was a little surprising? Did you have Oakland or did you have Grand Canyon University or anything like that?
I was kind of proud of Gonzaga. I didn't think that many people saw them going very far. And then they beat Kansas and are about to play Purdue. So that's like the only one I'm proud of. There's not really many upsets I got. Let me see. No, I'm not seeing any upsets I got. I'm sorry, y'all. I wish this were more interesting, but no. My women's is definitely better. I have like an 85% chance on the women's. I don't know what happened.
Every women's game, the favorite wins.
Yeah, in the women's, they're talking about the women's tournament being a little bit boring right now because there are no upsets, or there's very few upsets. The top seeds seem to be winning. There are a lot of great storylines in the women's, and we'll get to that in a little bit. I'm in second place right now, and I have 28 points, 28 correct wins predicted out of the 48 games that have been played so far. One that I'm quite proud of, you've always got to have a 12-5 upset. You got it. The 12-5 upset is a staple. It happens every year. You're always going to have a 12-5. I got James Madison. I correctly predicted their victory, so I was proud of that. I also had some 11 seeds that I correctly predicted, but that's the one that I'm most proud of because you got it. You got to know the 12-5 pattern going on there. Noah is in first place. He has 31 wins on the bracket that he posted online. Now, Noah does multiple brackets, so what's your best bracket in the ESPN app? Oh,
right now, I think it's my UConn bracket. But I chose this one especially because my confidence will never be in a one seed coming into the bracket. After, I don't even remember, I think it was Gonzaga was a one seed. After that, I could never pick a one seed again as my main bracket. So this year it's Iowa State. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, oh, they're going to beat that UConn team. They're going to beat that UConn team. But now that I look at it again, that UConn team is really, really good. I mean, that first half against Stetson, they crushed them, and the coach was disappointed in them because they got sloppy, is what he said.
But it was Stetson. I mean, Trey and I went and watched Florida Gulf Coast play Stetson earlier this year, and Florida Gulf Coast walked all over them, so I was kind of surprised to see they won the ASUN. Good for them to get in, a state school getting in there from the state of Florida. But yeah, UConn had a cakewalk in that one. They dealt pretty easily with Northwestern, but that is the favorite matchup of mine as well as we look on the horizon at what some of the Elite Eight matchups could be. That UConn-Iowa State one I'm really looking forward to. I have Iowa State in that one on my bracket. So great stuff coming up in the tournament. The Sweet 16 is coming, and so we're going to be watching that with all of you this weekend. In the women's brackets, that was referenced, the women's tournament's got some interesting storylines. You know, you've got LSU and Kim Mulkey, and they kind of almost had a brawl with South Carolina. South Carolina is so dominant and undefeated. You've also got Caitlin Clark, of course, and she had a close one in her last game against West Virginia. And we closely follow Florida Gulf Coast because that's where Tyler goes to school. And they had a game that came down to the buzzer against Oklahoma as well. So the women's tournament, guys, I know it's been a little boring as far as seeding, but there are some compelling storylines there.
I always like to think about, I think we watched a 60 Minute on this from ESPN, and it was about the USC player who got shot and paralyzed, and she came back and played. Her first game actually was against FGCU.
Yep, Southern California.
Uh-huh. Yep. Mm-hmm. And she is just amazing, and now she's a starter for them, which is the even crazier part. It just shows how good you can be, even through adversity. And that adversity will even propel her farther.
All right. Trey, anything you're interested in the women's tournament that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I would just like to point out that there are like absolutely no upsets happening here. I picked FSU because I thought that was going to be an upset. Nope, Bama won. Let me think. I picked FGCU because I thought that was a very close game. That was a good guess. If you're wondering why I've been looking at if there was an interesting one in my men's tournament. Nope. All of my upsets were wrong. Every single one.
I picked Drake. Oh. And I picked BYU. I was like, that first day, I'm like, geez, is my bracket going to go down?
Yeah, there wasn't an upset in the women's tournament. There wasn't one in the right. In the round of 64.
What was interesting is that West Virginia had Iowa on the ropes. Caitlin Clark, of course, yeah. All-time leading scorer. Some people joked that Iowa's women's basketball team played kind of like Iowa's football team in that they were not scoring very many points that night. But they ended up being able to come back and pull away in that one. There was also Oklahoma was down to Florida Gulf Coast quite a bit in that first game. Eventually, Oklahoma scrapped their way back in there and Juice Azudu missed a possible tying three-pointer. Tyler was able to travel with the Florida Gulf Coast band to Bloomington for that game, and we want to get him on soon so he can talk about his experience because he had an awesome experience going up there to Bloomington and following the team and all the excitement around the women's tournament. So we'll get him in here, but that was a great matchup as well.
Throughout all of my research, I have found one upset in the women's bracket, and that is number 7 Duke over number 2 Ohio State. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Ohio State.
Yeah.
So some good matchups in the women's tournament coming. It's all top seeds now, so there's going to be some good matchups, and there certainly will be some upsets as they move through the next round. All right, now we want to shift some gears because as basketball will continue on for the next few weeks, the next major thing on the horizon in at least our conversations is the NFL draft. So the NFL draft is coming soon to a television near you. It's a great spectacle to watch. Of course, we've been through the combine and now we're into some of the pro days. And so Noah has been doing a ton of research on college football and the NFL draft. And so he's going to do some previewing of some of the big guys, the offensive and defensive linemen, and also some linebackers and edge rushers. So I'm going to pass it over to Noah. Noah, what do you got as far as the NFL draft?
So everyone else always has on their list some, you know, honorable mentions. So I have to put in a dishonorable mention that, Dad, I know you're going to have some comments on this guy. J.C. Latham. Allowed 5 sacks versus USF, 3 of which went to Daquan Evans. Daquan Evans is a player that I will mention in my next segment on this same topic, which is the underrateds. The underrateds are players that I think are underrated, obviously, and should be rated higher on their draft boards. So first up, J.C. Latham, obviously. Dad, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, so what is Latham's prognosis? Like, where is he projected to go in the NFL draft?
Currently, I believe he's the third tackle.
The third best tackle in the NFL draft. So, I got tickets for the boys and I to attend USF in Alabama here in the Bay Area, and it was a game that I bought the tickets for thinking we're gonna go watch Alabama and we're gonna go watch a bunch of future pros because USF has always been down and they're probably gonna get stomped. And you know, I told the boys even like right before the kickoff, I said, look, Alabama's probably gonna run back the kickoff for a touchdown and this game's gonna be over. But instead, the game ended up being really close all the way to the end. We got rained on. We got sunburned. We had every experience we could have in that stadium. And but I turned to Noah during that game and I said, "Who is this tackle from Alabama that's just getting worked over?" Because USF was coming with all kinds of exotic blitzes. Yes, Daquan Evans had himself a career day, and this guy was just a turnstile for USF. And now he's going to be the third best tackle. So I'm thinking the tackle group is not going to be very strong in this draft.
No, I don't think so either. I mean,
you say that, but I have four tackles on this list
of your underrated players.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Because they're under J.C. Latham.
And so they should be better. Obviously, mm-hmm. they'll be better than J.C. Latham.
Yeah.
All right. So where do you want to take us? No, you got defensive linemen, linebackers, and offensive linemen.
So at number 10, we've got Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M. He's a linebacker, 6'2". But his important measurables are his wingspan at 6'8", his broad jump at 9'10", his vertical at 34.5 inches, and his... 4.540.
He could tackle a prime Brian Dawkins and you wouldn't stop him. Well, no, I'm sorry. He couldn't. The hip drop tackle. My bad.
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
That's another change. Yeah. Every tackle from last year is now outlawed in the NFL. But wow, this guy he sounds like quite the physical specimen as
6'8" wingspan. Oh my God.
As a linebacker. I'm assuming he's probably an outside edge rush guy.
No, he's a normal linebacker.
He's an inside backer, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Next up, from Canada, player that went to Howard from a tackle, 6'8", 353 pounds. He ran a 5'11" 40. His wingspan is 7'2".
Whoa.
And he's the biggest offensive lineman in the draft by far. I would compare him to Laremy Tunsil.
What's his name?
His name is Anim Donkwa.
That one's going to the Hall of Fame. That one. Oh my God.
This guy is. Oh my gosh, he's a steel pole. You can't get through him.
That sounds like a brick wall right yeah. there.
He did not go to the combine, unfortunately.
House.
Next up, I've got Tavondre Sweat from Texas. He plays defensive tackle. He's 6'4". He is 366 pounds. He ran the slowest 40 at 5.27. But his wingspan, again, is 6'9". He has an 8'2" broad jump. I can't jump that far, okay. And I weigh 200 pounds less than him.
Hold on. How much does he weigh?
366.
He plays 366 and he can jump 8 feet. Yeah. I don't think that defies everything I know and love.
Oh, I wasn't done. He also has, he has a 26-inch vertical.
At 366 pounds.
I compared him to Jeffrey Simmons in the way that he has a very strong power rush. You can't put him anywhere, though. He's pretty much strictly a defensive tackle. And he has to be inside of the D-line.
I think this is the guy that caught the touchdown in the Big Ten Championship or whatever.
I do not know.
I think he did.
But yeah, this Hold guy on. Is actually a beast.
What conference is Texas in?
I don't
Big
know.
Ten?
Big 12.
Big, yeah, 12. Big 12. I was close.
What you got next?
Next up from Washington, he plays guard and tackle. Troy Tanu. Sorry. He is 6'4", 317 pounds. He ran a 5.01 40, which was the fastest among offensive linemen. A 9'5" broad jump. Again, the best amongst offensive linemen, in a 32.5-inch vertical. Once more, the best among offensive linemen. He was obviously the most athletic, and I compare him to Zach Martin, who, if I go in too much depth about this would be a two-hour podcast, but Zach Martin is the greatest offensive lineman ever.
All right, so this guy is another athletic freak, but you've got two other tackles ahead of him, so I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to the rest of this list here.
Oh, yeah. And then next up, we've got Tyron Harper, the linebacker out of Missouri. He is 6'2", 231 pounds. He ran a 4.5 40. He didn't do anything else. But I think that this guy is going to be a really versatile linebacker. He, to me, he looks like prime Devin White, which is
prime Devin White as opposed to 2023 yeah. Devin White. Okay,
the guy we're talking like 2020 Devin White, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say Super Bowl run Devin White, the one that can get across the field.
Playoff Devin White,
the one that can get across the field in 2 seconds to go and nail Alvin Kamara in the face. All right. Another tackle out of Oklahoma, the second, or actually the third biggest offensive lineman, Tyler Guton. He is 6'8", 322 pounds, 5'1", 940. His wingspan is 6'10", and he didn't do anything else. This guy is really comparable to Trent Williams because he has that long and versatile ability. But my next guy is even better. He's bigger, he's faster, and he has longer arms. Patrick Paul out of Houston, the tackle, 6'8", 331 pounds. He almost, or actually he did beat Guton in the 40 by 0.03 or 0.06, 5.1340. He had 7'2" wingspan, and this guy can move. I don't say that a lot about a guy that's 300 pounds and 6'8". But I think this is going to be the best offensive lineman in the draft. He's out of Houston. He didn't allow a sack, and I think he's going to be the best offensive lineman in this draft.
How long are we talking not a sack? His whole entire college career?
Last season.
So I've been looking down at my phone. I've been doing some research. So it was, in fact, Tavondre Sweat who caught the touchdown in the Big 12 championship. Here's his stat line. 1 reception, 2 yards, 1 touchdown.
All right.
Literally it.
So you get a versatile player. You get a guy who's a D lineman and a tight end.
Vita Vea.
All right. Top three.
Okay.
Number three, Javon Solomon, edge rusher and linebacker out of Troy. He's 6'1". He's small. He weighs 246 pounds. His important stat, I'd say key, 16 sacks.
Oh, my God.
4.7140. His wingspan is 6'8". He's 6'1". His broad jump is 9'11", and he benched 23 times. His vertical, 37 inches. He's short. He's athletic. Can you name another guy in the NFL who is short and athletic?
Are you going to talk about recently retired NFL players?
Nope. Current player.
Oh, current player. I was going to go Aaron Donald, but...
No. Edge rusher. He currently plays for the Dallas Cowboys. His name is Micah Parsons.
Micah Parsons is not small.
Micah Parsons is 6'3".
He's 6'3".
That's not small.
He's smaller than every other edge rusher. Okay, every other starting Pro Bowl edge rusher.
I would not consider him small. I'm thinking like Dwight Freeney, Aaron Donald small, okay?
Yeah.
16 sacks at only 6'1", 246 is crazy.
And my favorite thing.
And a 6'8 wingspan. Mm-hmm.
If I showed this picture to Tyler of him, Tyler would say, is that Novian Smart? I got to tag him in this because, oh my gosh, does he look like Novian Smart?
Shout out to Novian Smart, former St. Pete High linebacker.
Great player. Braden Fisk at number 2 from FSU, the inside D lineman. 6'4", 292 pounds. His important stat is 6 sacks, but 3 of them came in that amazing ACC championship. In the 5 versus 6 seed matchup versus Georgia. He had a 4.78 40, which is on the faster side for D linemen. Only a 6'5 wingspan and a 9'9 broad jump. 26 on the bench and a 33.5 inch vertical. He's a very dominant bull rush, similar to Vita Vea. And he can stop the run game very easily.
Yeah, I do recall seeing some of his workouts. I did not watch the combine, and I certainly didn't watch in the detail you do. But I did pay attention to Fisk because I think his numbers and his output at the combine was rather surprising based on his output during the season. So he'll be an interesting one to watch to see where he goes on draft day.
Before I give number one, I'd like to shout out Jason Light for his amazing ability to draft in the third round. since 2017.
Well, hold on. Let's talk about the third round. Why is the third round important?
Jason Light just traded for, or recently traded for, the Lions' third round pick. He traded away Carlson Davis. And I think this guy that I'm about to mention would be a perfect third round pick.
So okay, now lay on us some history of the third round picks of Jason Light as Buccaneers GM.
Since 2017.
Okay, that's a long ways back.
Jason Light has drafted Chris Godwin, Kendall Beckwith, Alex Kappa, Mike Edwards, Jamel Dean, Robert Hainsey, Yaya Diaby, and Rashad White.
And all of those have become at least serviceable starters in the NFL.
Except for Kendall Beckwith.
Who I think would have been a starter if he did not have an accident and break his leg and not be able to come back to the NFL. So, yeah, that is quite a track record. You know, Godwin's a Pro Bowler, certainly, in there. Mike Edwards has made his impact in a couple of different places. Some other guys you had on the list, tell me again.
Rashad White.
Rashad White for 1,000 this
Jamel
year.
Dean, obviously, is a starter currently. He is the starting corner. Mm-hmm. Alex Kappa, the starter in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And Yaya Diaby is now going to take over the role of Shaq Barrett.
Yep. Noah's pick for defensive rookie of the year, absolutely. Yeah. Yaya Diaby.
Yeah.
Or as mom likes to call him, Yaya Da Baby.
All right, number one, the linebacker. Looking for a veteran presence in Lavonte David, Peyton Wilson out of NC State. 6'4", 233 pounds. This guy ran the fastest 40 at 4.43. If I would mention again, the fastest player on the Bucs linebacker group from years back was Devin White. And this is the linebacker that Jason Light wants to have on his team. 6'4" wingspan, 9'11" broad jump, and a 34.5-inch vertical. I, again, would compare him to a Devin White, or more similarly, to a Bobby Wagner.
I think I would compare him to a Luke Kuechly.
I do like that.
Luke Kuechly is 6'3". He's six, Peyton Wilson is 6'4". Luke Kuechly was like 235, I think. And then Peyton Wilson is 233. Does that say?
Yep.
233. Yeah. Peyton Wilson was the defensive player of the year, best linebacker.
Yeah, best linebacker.
Yeah, and another one that I would like the Bucs to draft, if they could, I don't know, is Laiatu Latu.
Yes. I'll mention, because I didn't put these guys in, but I still think that they're great. Jared Verse, obviously, out of Florida State, will be a first-round pick. Yeah. Laiatu Latu will be a first-round pick. Dallas Turner will also be a first-round pick out of Alabama, very important linebacker for them. There's a lot. This is a really in-depth draft this year, so it's important that I mention all these guys.
Yeah, there are a lot of players, a lot of depth in this draft. You'll be able to get some talented plug-and-play NFL starters well beyond the first round in this draft.
Yeah,
unlike last year where the talent dropped off significantly in the middle of the first round.
Yeah, I saw like two different mock drafts for like the Bucks, and one of them had Laiatu Latu for our first pick, and then the other one had Peyton Wilson for our first pick. So I would be fine with either, but I like Laiatu better.
The reason I put Peyton Wilson in here, and as Trader said, he won linebacker of the year, so why is he underrated? Because I still see guys like Dallas Turner jump over him, and Peyton Wilson is the best linebacker in this class, by no doubt in my mind.
And I think I heard you say that you feel like if the Bucs draft him, he'd be a long-term replacement for David.
Yes.
For Lavonte David.
Because, again, he wanted a veteran presence in his first year, and he would be okay sitting, he said, in his conference meetings with the Bucs, actually.
All right. So this is Noah's putting it on the line here. Peyton Wilson to the Bucs, third round. Write it down. Take a picture.
He'll be a second or third, I think. I don't think he'll end up being a first rounder.
Well, that's some strong analysis there from Noah on offensive, defensive linemen, and linebackers. So thank you for that. What position group are you going to be turning to for our next episode?
Yeah, tune in next week for corners and quarters.
Corners and quarters?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll also be safeties and stuff, so defensive backs and quarterbacks.
Okay. All right. Well, we will look forward to that. We also look forward to the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. When we talk to you next, we might be down to the Final Four. That's crazy how fast it goes, huh?
And the NIT Championship with Robbie Avila.
So Trey will be tuning into that, and he will give you a full report on the NIT Championship. That's all for this week from the Dynamite Sports Podcast. Follow us on our social media channels. We'd love to hear from you and interact with you. We're going to leave you behind with a...